Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It was 50 years ago that the Mississippi Summer Project, now known as Freedom Summer, took place. Most of the work that year was in Mississippi. SNCC Chair John Lewis said in July of that year, Mississippi is the stronghold of the whole vicious system of segregation. If we can crack Mississippi, we will likely be able to crack the system in the rest of the country. In the new book, Risking Everything, a Freedom Summer Reader, edited by our first guest this hour, Michael Edmonds, we find this. In 1963, more than 90% of the state's eligible black residents could not vote. Mississippi had used literacy tests, poll taxes, terror to keep African Americans from voting. So SNCC ordered this large-scale voter registration drive, and freedom schools were also a part of the summer, and there were other parts of the summer as well. Michael has compiled 44 documents that are just riveting. They are pertinent to Freedom Summer. They were gathered by the Wisconsin Historical Society. How did this happen in Wisconsin? We'll ask him that. He'll be joining us this hour from our Madison studios. Later, Margaret Rosga, who went to Alabama to register voters in 1965 and later worked with the open housing marches in Milwaukee. She is the widow of Father James Groppi. She's a professor of English at UW-Waukesha. And for those of you who listen to us regularly, you will know that about a month ago, or a little more than that, she was on the show because she was gathering people to go to Alabama, Mississippi, to civil rights landmarks. And what a trip it was. She took Milwaukee high school students and middle school students, and we will be speaking with a couple of those students who were on the journey, and with an associate professor at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee Department of Film who has helped the young students document their experience, and it's going to be on display at Arts at Large coming up July 25 is the opening. So it is a mighty full hour. Well, welcoming your phone calls, I would imagine there are a few people listening who are part of Freedom Summer. We'd like very much to hear from you. Michael Edmonds is our guest, Deputy Director of the Library Archives at the Wisconsin Historical Society, curator of its online collection of more than 25,000 pages documenting Freedom Summer, and editor, as we said, of Risking Everything, a Freedom Summer Reader. Hello, Michael. Thanks so much for being with us.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
Thanks for having me.
How did you get 25,000 pages? Why aren't they in Mississippi?
We get asked that all the time.
I'll bet.
A number of University of Wisconsin grad students in the mid-60s had been staff or volunteers with CORE and SNCC. Mm. And when they came back to Wisconsin to go to school, they realized that the record of what they had done and what the local people had done would vanish if it wasn't preserved. And the Wisconsin Historical Society put them on the payroll and said, go back and collect what you can.
Oh, that's wonderful. I'm glad. It's just such a, you found documents that are so moving. I mean, some of them are very hard to read because of what happened to some of the workers. It was a violent summer in many ways, but it's all simultaneously inspirational.
Yes, it is. And the conference you mentioned in Mississippi last month that Peggy and the kids were at was quite inspiring to meet these people face to face.
Why don't you talk? You write a very interesting intro to the book, and you talk about how Mississippi's leaders, the planning that they did themselves for Freedom Summer, and what they did to try to get at the people. I mean, it was really extensive and pretty vicious.
You mean the opposition?
Yeah, we can't hear you very well. Is there something?
Let me see what I can do.
There,
here.
That's better. That's
All
better.
Right, see if I can do this.
Okay.
The white power structure in Mississippi controlled all aspects of life, and they knew the summer project was going to happen. So in the spring of 64, they doubled the size of the state police. They passed new laws making picketing and literature distribution illegal. And the membership of the Klan absolutely mushroomed. The mayor of Jackson, the capital of Mississippi, actually told the press, we'll be ready for them. They won't have a chance.
Mm. And describe a little more. I just briefly described what the situation was for African Americans. It is extraordinary. It wasn't that long ago that people couldn't vote. That was only 50 years ago.
Oh, many people would say that, of course, voting's being suppressed today.
Mm-hmm.
But Voting was not a big issue. It was the brutal exploitation in all aspects of life of one half of the population by the other.
You have all kinds of different documents in this book, and some of them are quite rare and published for the first time. There were deaths. There were the deaths the first day of Freedom Summer of the three civil rights workers, a couple of whom came from the north and were killed on the first day of Freedom Summer. I believe you have, in one of the parts of the book, the application to work on the Freedom Summer Project, which kind of gives you chills to read now, from Andrew Goodman.
Yes, that's one of the documents we included. It was typical of the hundreds and hundreds of applications that they received. Mickey Schwerner, the other person killed that day, actually wrote a fairly long essay about why he wanted to be involved, and that's in the online archive.
Mm-hmm. You want to remind us, and it's so true, you consider the people who are speaking from these pages were barely out of their teens when they risked everything, and these are the people who came from the north, to say nothing of the people who lived in Mississippi, who were really risking everything to overturn injustice.
Yes, it was a young people's movement. Certainly Martin Luther King's organization was older, and the people in the NAACP tended to be older. But SNCC and CORE were populated largely by young people.
Some of the names that have come from that time, and sometimes I think we forget their early histories. You start the book with a quote which I used from John Lewis. He was beaten severely. He was very much a hero of that summer, don't you think, and certainly of the civil rights movement.
Yes, of the movement as a whole, for sure. That summer, he spent much of his time in Atlanta at SNCC headquarters. And the person on the ground in Mississippi was Bob Moses, Robert Parrish Moses. And the co-director was Dave Dennis of CORE.
Do you think that we now, we're going to talk to a couple young people who went on the journey just a couple weeks ago. Do you think that the way all of this is taught now, and I wonder if you hope to get this book in the hands of public school students all over the state of Wisconsin, that we do tend to think about the big names, Martin Luther King, John Lewis, Rosa Parks, instead of realizing the contributions of so many thousands of people, those who were victims of oppression and those who came down to help change the system?
We certainly have a skewed understanding as a nation as a whole of what happened. In the history business, we call this the heroes and holidays approach.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knows Rosa Parks and Martin Luther King. And I don't mean to diminish what they did. They were definitely heroes. But there were literally tens of thousands of other people who had to put their bodies in front of shotguns and police dogs just to secure the right to vote.
Mm-hmm. Tell me more about the young people who came from the north, where they were trained, who did the training, if they knew what they were getting into.
By the end of the training they did, volunteers came from literally every state in five foreign countries, heavy concentrations from Michigan, New York, California, and Illinois. At least 20 people came from Wisconsin, and they spent the second half of June in training at Oxford, Ohio. The training was led by SNCC and CORE veterans, staff members, who tried to enlighten them about what they were getting into. There was some tension during that training. Some of the staff people thought that these naive, affluent, idealistic white people were just going to be wiped out by the opponents. Others thought they didn't have enough respect for the local black Mississippi residents to whom they'd have to answer. So the training was a little uneasy. And then right in the middle of training, of course, Cheney, Goodman, and Schwerner disappeared. The press kept saying no one knew what had happened, but everybody knew they were dead.
Hmm. Another part of the summer, we hear an awful lot about voting registration drives. I don't think we hear as much about the Freedom Schools, and your book has a lot of different elements that relate to the Freedom Schools. What were they? What was the idea? What kind of education schooling was envisioned in the Freedom Schools?
Well, most Mississippians had a sixth grade education or less. They really knew nothing about their own history or civics, politics. They had been deliberately kept in the dark. One Freedom School student told me in Mississippi last month that when he was little, the first time he heard about algebra was in the Freedom School, because it wasn't taught in his local school. But the goal of the Freedom School component of Freedom Summer was to undermine the decades and decades of white supremacist indoctrination that had been taught to generations of black residents.
The other component was the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party, which is really an interesting chapter in American history, isn't it?
It is. It is. The Mississippi was a one-party state. There was no Republican Party, because the Republicans were the party of Lincoln and the Northern invaders. The Democratic Party had always been controlled by white supremacists. So there was no way that black Mississippians could become active in politics without starting a new party. And it was the staff of CORE and SNCC who organized local people to do this on their own.
Mm-hmm. The documents that you have gathered in this book, I want to look at the element of fear, because obviously there's a big element of fear among African Americans. You know, if you tried to vote, if you tried to express who you were, if you tried to have a life, really, there was an element of fear in how you might be hurt. Certainly, if you were somebody from the North going South, you had virtually no idea of what you were getting into. And I'm sure Margaret Roscoe will say this. She was afraid to go down South, not sure what you're going to encounter. How did people address fear?
The people I talked to all admitted to having been very afraid. But you can't function day to day if that's what you're paying attention to. So they managed to move it over to the edge of their consciousness and carry on with what they went there to do. They all also said it was tremendously compelling work, maybe the most important and moving work they ever did. Mm-hmm. And that must have helped them keep the fear at bay.
Were they effective? What did they do that changed everything, if anything?
There were two very effective aspects of the summer. One was they secured the nation's attention. Before Freedom Summer, the rest of the country really didn't care about segregation in the South. But when it was middle-class white kids getting beat up and arrested and shot, all of a sudden it was national news. The second was the Freedom Schools. They opened doors. They broadened the minds of thousands and thousands of local kids who didn't see their life the same way afterwards.
We welcome some phone calls. Michael Edmonds is with us, the first part of the program. His book is Risking Everything. He edited this book, which is a series of writings from people who were involved in Freedom Summer in a whole host of ways, looking at, well, right before Freedom Summer, looking at the training these young people who went South had, the opposition and the violence. It was vicious, and the opposition was intense, voter registration programs, how they were conducted. And these are all from people who participated. So it's an oral history, written history of the people who were there. The Freedom Schools, the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party, and then what happened after Freedom Summer. If any of you were there, it would be very interesting to hear from you now. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@WPR.org. Facebook is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Michael is Deputy Director of the Library Archives at the Wisconsin Historical Society, and he is curator of the online collection. They have a huge number of pages, 25,000 pages, documenting Freedom Summer. Editor of Risking Everything, a Freedom Summer reader. 800-486-8655 is the number. Was that too messy? I should say it again. 800-486-8655. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go to some phone calls for Michael Lee in Oshkosh. Hi.
Hi, this is Lee. I'm sorry to cut out a little. Kathleen, I'm a big fan of yours right up front. I listen to you every day.
Thanks, Lee.
I'm just calling because it's very coincidental. This is Lee in Oshkosh. Michael, I've been talking to you over emails, and you're going to be speaking at an event we're doing in Oshkosh. Our event is going to be called Freedom Summer Comes Home. It'll be September 13th. It's a public event. It's a free event. Michael will be one of our speakers. We'll have Claiborne Benson, who is the director of the Wisconsin Black Historical Society.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have a dramatic reading group called the Bronzeville Arts Ensemble from Milwaukee. They're young people that will do readings of accounts from people that lived in Mississippi at the time. And we'll have David Cannon, the chair of the political science department at UW-Madison. You've had him on the program last fall.
Uh-huh.
He's going to be speaking about voters' rights issues.
Wonderful.
So, yeah, we thought it's perfect timing, the 50th anniversary. We'd commemorate the struggle and the memories of those people that worked so hard to gain their right to vote and to be full citizens. And we'd like to relate that. We hope history is not repeating itself with some legislation and rulings that have come down lately. So we'd like to spotlight those, too.
Thank you,
and
Lee.
Also,
yes, I'm sorry.
One other thing. It's going to be a joyful event besides not only commemorating those issues from the past and the present, but also a joy of lives well-lived, fully with purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And have music throughout the day, too.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be great if all people in that Fox Valley area or Wisconsin throughout would come and join us and unite and fight the oppression and suppression of the vote.
Do you, Lee, have a website or anything like that?
Right now we don't have a website. If I could leave an email address, people could contact me and we could give them more information.
All right, go ahead.
Okay, it's L, and my last name is SOSNOSKI at NEW.RR.com.
Okay.
Yeah. Great. And I should say this is an event, too, sponsored by Esther, which is part of Wisdom, like Willie Briscoe's Micah. This is a Fox Valley chapter.
Okay. Wonderful. Thank you. Thanks very much for calling. And I know Arts at Large in Milwaukee is going to have a display on July 25. We'll talk about as we continue on the show. I'm wondering if this book, some of the brutality is hard to read because there was some horrible violence during this summer as well. And some of the authors, because maybe we need to hear about this kind of violence too, do it pretty graphically. Do you hope to have this book in the hands of young students all over the state? Is it too much for young eyes, very young eyes?
I don't think it's too much, and I certainly hope to have it in the hands of classrooms all over the nation. In middle school, teachers teach about the Holocaust, and they read fairly graphic and certainly very moving things. And kids can deal with this. I think it's much more important that people realize the risks that were taken by the people who made the world the way it is today.
Let's go to Joyce in Hudson. Hi, Joyce. Hi, Joyce. Are you there, Joyce? Joyce is not there. Continue to call, though. We are welcoming your phone calls during the course of the hour. We're going to also introduce, stay with us for a few more moments, please, Michael. Margaret Rosga is with us. Margaret went to Alabama to register voters in 1965 and later worked with the open housing marches in Milwaukee. She, of course, is the widow of Father James Groppi. She's a professor of English at UW-Waukesha, author of several books of poetry. She's the author of 200 Nights and One Day. And she took a group of MPS students on a Freedom Ride pilgrimage in late June. We did a show on that in late June. We'll later be speaking with one of the students who was on the journey and with an associate professor at UW-Milwaukee Department of Film who helped the young students document their experience. So Michael, stay with us. And Margaret, let me say hello to you as well. Hi, Margaret.
Hello, Kathleen.
Hi. So we last talked to you when you were, we're getting an echo on this line. Do you hear it too?
Yes, a little bit.
Okay. I don't know what to do about that other than I know what to do. I got to figure it out. Last time we talked to you, the journey was about to begin where you were taking young students. I'm wondering what it was like, your experience from 50 years ago, the summer of 65, after Freedom Summer, going down to register people to vote, compared with the young students. Were they wide-eyed by what they saw and what they heard?
They were. Actually, the trip was an intergenerational trip. There were 10 adults, mostly from the Waukesha area, as well as the students from Milwaukee Public Schools who had been studying Freedom Summer all semester. But being in the places where things happen made the experience very real for them. Part of the time, they were at a 50th anniversary conference in Jackson, Mississippi, and it happened that the night we arrived, the students walked into the dorm where they were going to be staying at Jackson State University, and people were hushing them as they walked in, and so something was going on, and they didn't know what. So they looked around, and they saw this group of people gathered around talking, and it was Bob Moses, who was the inspiration, did the push to have the Freedom Summer, where volunteers came from all over the country to work on voter registration in Mississippi. It was Bob Moses.
Oh, my gosh.
Bob Moses, the person that the students had picked out as their hero, as the person they most wanted to meet. There he was, sitting in the dorm, having this, you know, just informal discussion with everyone. And one of the students, Professor Cobb, who will be with you later, took a picture of maybe the student is going to be with you. And that's what we all saw the next day on Facebook, this student, you know, the up-and-coming, the person who's picking up the banner with the person who helped to create that banner. It was just a phenomenal experience for our students.
I imagine. Let's talk a little bit more about your experience. You were, I think, only 19 years old the summer you went to Alabama to register people to vote. We were talking with Daniel about the amount of fear that everybody had to conquer. Those who couldn't vote had to conquer a lot of fear to be able to vote. And those who were going north to south, you hadn't been there before. I think I've read that you were pretty afraid, weren't you?
I was. After we were in our county for a while, a certain amount of the work became routine. But you never knew when something would happen. There was a day when we stopped at the house, the cabin of a sharecropping family, and one of the elders from the family was sitting on the porch, and we started to talk to her about registering to vote. And a white man came from around the cabin and started hollering at us that we couldn't be there, that was his property, we should get out. I somewhat naively and foolishly began to develop an argument with him about, well, if this was where she lived, then she had a right to have people come and visit her, and he couldn't chase her visitors away. He took a step closer to me and started to holler at me, shouting, so, and I was so close to him that I could feel the spit projected from his, you know, when he would speak. I was so scared, I started to laugh, which enraged him even more. And I could feel his, you know, I could see the tendons in his neck stick out and saw his arms come up. I felt like he wanted to choke me. Fortunately, the project director had the sense to pull on the back of my shirt, and I got the message that I should walk backwards. And I did that very slowly until I was even with the car we were driving that day, and somebody opened the door for me, another volunteer, and we got in and drove off. And then took the afternoon off. One of the local leaders had a pond in the back of his farm, and we went swimming. But, yeah, you never knew when you would encounter somebody who was hostile like that. So there certainly was terrifying opposition to the right to vote.
Yeah. You mentioned Bob Moses in that conference, and Bob Moses is featured. There's a short profile of the director of the Freedom Summer Project. That's interesting that the students really wanted to meet him, of all people. Why would that be the case, Michael? What does your book include by Moses or about Moses?
Well, he's all through the book. He was respected, described almost as a Christ-like figure by some of the volunteers. He was very quiet, thoughtful, nonviolent, let other people speak. And then when he spoke, as one of the volunteers said, the room fell silent and he said more common sense than everybody else. He was the undisputed moral authority of Freedom Summer.
Hmm. And what were his comments 50 years later, Margaret?
Well, again, he true to form, as Michael described, let the students do a lot of the talking, sharing their impressions. Actually, the adults in the group were not staying at the Jackson State dorm, so the students will have to tell you more about that conversation because we left to go check into where we were staying. But he is. His academic background is philosophy. And he has the demeanor of a philosopher, very, very quiet, very thoughtful, but with this absolute commitment to racial justice.
Let's take a couple phone calls. Glenn is in Neillsville. Hi, Glenn.
Yeah, I just want to say I was a 16-year-old wide-eyed farm boy from Northeast Iowa in 1964. But I just read Isadora Wilkerson, I think that's her name, the book The Warmth of Other Suns, about the Great Migration, and I never in my life realized how depraved and how hard it was in the South, even in the 60s.
It was a great book. Michael, you want to respond?
I think that you are not atypical. Most Americans outside the South didn't understand what was going on. And, you know, in many ways, we're no less segregated today. We all live in our own bubbles.
Mm-hmm. Margaret?
I just want to pick up on the last thing. The experience of being in that interracial, intergenerational group going down South for the 50th anniversary was a great symbol, I think. On that bus were people from various backgrounds, and you know, I did worry some about would we all get along, and people cried at the end. They were going to miss their friends, the white suburban adults and the inner city African American students, and I think that was a great symbol of what we could become if we would just realize what a powerful, good thing this would be. But you know, in terms of the South in the 1960s, you know, sometimes people will say things like they don't understand why African Americans bring up slavery again. Slavery was abolished, 150 years ago. But after the end of the Reconstruction in the South, the conditions were reestablished. It was slavery in everything but name, if you were working on a plantation as a sharecropper. And so really, that virtual slavery didn't end until, you know, well into the 20th century. It was the thing, actually, that got me motivated to go down South. I remember watching Fannie Lou Hamer testify at the 1964 Democratic Convention, the Credentials Committee, about having been pulled off of a bus and beaten because she was trying to register to vote. And here I was, a good Catholic white girl living on the south side of Milwaukee, and I said, this is America?
Mm-hmm.
You got to be kidding me. And so I began to learn about it and began to feel like I needed to be part of the solution.
And you have been ever since. Michael and Margaret, we want to thank you both so much. We're going to talk with one of the students who was on that journey, led by Margaret, and with a professor who has documented their experiences. Those will all be part of a show at Arts at Large coming up pretty soon. Thank you, Michael, so much. The book is available widely, I certainly hope.
Yes, it's in bookstores in Milwaukee. Boswell has it. And
great.
Of course, you can order online.
Wonderful. Well, it's just a wonderful body of work. Thank you, Michael. The book is Risking Everything, a Freedom Summer Reader. Margaret, all the best to you. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye, Michael.
Yeah, he says goodbye, too. I said goodbye to him already. We have two people with us in studio who were on that journey. When Margaret was here about a month and a half ago, I was thinking in the back of my mind, I really wanted to go on it, actually. I guess I should have, but I didn't. So I want to find out all about it. It took place, the students were just back recently, and people from Waukesha. It was, as Margaret said, a real intergenerational experience. And we're going to continue taking phone calls. We have a lot of them coming in as well. We're talking about the Freedom Summer, 50 years ago this summer, and our two guests in our Milwaukee studios now were on that bus journey, and what a trip it was to civil rights landmarks all over the South. Dr. Portia Cobb is with us, professor at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee's Department of Film, Video, Animation, and New Genres. She's a digital artist and a producer of short documentary and has served as director of its community media project for a number of years. This summer, she was selected to participate in the Freedom Summer Journey and to assist Arts at Large and the young participants in documenting their experiences, which will be important now and 50 years hence. They may be the subject of a book just like the one that we're talking about today. Portia, thank you so much for being with us.
It's my pleasure.
Yeah, and what a journey. I really wish I had gone on it. To hear Margaret talk about it, when I look at the places that you were, you'll be thinking about it for a long time, won't you?
I don't think I could have imagined the enormity of the experience that I ended up having on this journey. And I think I kind of hesitated when they asked me to go. Usually I'm not in Milwaukee this time of year. Mm. And I remember a friend saying, what could you be, you know, hesitating about? So it was a grand experience for me. And to reconnect with young people in this way.
Yeah. And you have been helping with them gathering their thoughts about this, which will be part of, is it a video display at Arts and Large or written display or
it's
what?
It's going to be comprised of multimedia. So we're going to have a lot of still photographs that were taken along the journey, some audio components where they were actually able to speak with Bob Moses and Danny Glover, people of that nature, and their own voices, you know, in response to the things that they were seeing, and some video moments that we also were able to record.
Mm-hmm. We also have one of the young students with us who was on this journey, and she goes to a very interesting school we'll hear about. It's the Milwaukee Academy of Chinese Language. Begule Tabala is with us to talk about her experience. Thank you so much for being with us. How did you happen? Was this something you thought about, or did you just jump right in and say, hey, I want to go on this trip?
It was actually when we was talking to Ms. Elliott, our teacher, that helped us know about this Freedom Summer stuff in about Arts at Large. So she said, we're going to be working in this project, and we're going to be talking about the things that you learn about Freedom Summer and civil rights and then all that history, American history, about that experience. And I didn't know how far it's going to go. So until she said, we're going to do some posters and this all kinds of stuff, there's a trip coming up. And so that was a great experience to be part of this trip.
Mm-hmm. How old are you?
14.
14? Oh, it was a big journey for you then, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, to be on your own. And are you from this country originally? You have a bit of an accent, so.
No, I'm from Africa. Oh. I was born in Congo, and then I lived in Rwanda for 12 years.
Oh, my goodness.
And then I'm here for 2 years.
Wow, you've had a life, haven't you?
Well, way beyond your young years. Did you study, when you were young, the civil rights movement in this country?
Yes, I studied in eighth grade. So this is my first year studying about it. Last year in seventh grade, I didn't even know what was Freedom Summer. I didn't even know the American history yet.
Mm-hmm. So what was particularly moving to you? What when you met either Bob Moses or you went to a gravesite or you walked across a bridge? I know you went to some incredible places, landmarks. Were there some places that were particularly moving for you?
Yes, a lot of places had made me realize a lot of things. Like in Jackson, we had learned a lot of stuff. We had met some great people, powerful people. And then I had thought about it and say, what if we are the young people to help others understand the history, because I think many of the people don't know the history yet. Mm-hmm. So this was a great experience to learn more about it and to get to know people that I didn't know, like Miss Peggy, Bob Moses, and some incredible people that we met.
Yeah, I would imagine it was that kind of journey. We were talking during the first half hour with Michael, Professor Cobb, about whether or not we've sanitized this whole movement, that people are now learning in terms of, not that he wasn't a person to read everything you can about Dr. Martin Luther King, and maybe figures Rosa Parks, and we've made them without flaws, larger than life, and the leaders of a whole movement, neglecting all of the other thousands and thousands of people who stepped up to do some very courageous things. Did you feel that the young students, and maybe yourself as well, learned about how grassroots a movement this was and how many heroes there were?
Certainly, at the conference, there were people there who were from the Freedom Schools, from the Highlander Schools.
Mm-hmm.
When all of these events happened, I would have been in the fourth grade, you know, reading about them or hearing about them, you know, maybe marginally, not knowing the impact that it would have. So seeing even contemporaries of my own who had always been involved because they had no choice but to be involved. On this trip, we also met Joanne Bland, who was 11 years old, I think she said, when she first, during Bloody Sunday. And she and her sister were, you know, assaulted on that bridge. And so she told our students the full story. And I think it made it really visceral and real. It made it very real for us, all of us as adults, too, have this discussion about where we might have been in our lives at the time, or, you know, whether anyone, maybe you didn't even exist at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But at the conference, there were so many, many people who were on that stage. And a documentarian whose name is Judith Richardson, she was one of the producers of Eyes on the Prize.
Oh, really?
And she basically was the MC for the first plenary that we went to, which introduced us to all of these survivors of Freedom Summer. And seeing, you know, these veterans now, you know, come back, they were the foot soldiers, and we learned new terms. You know, I don't know that I've ever used that before, but I began to realize who they were.
Mm-hmm.
And who survived it and what stories they had.
Mm-hmm.
So it was quite phenomenal.
I imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And what about now? What did they pinpoint as issues that that need attention in 2014?
Well, there were a couple of youth summits that were going on. I didn't sit in on all of them, and it really seemed as if their voices were dominant and they were given a forum. I think one of the biggest issues that we learned about when we were there was about a conflict at Nissan and around benefits and things of that nature that are affecting local people working in that industry there.
Mm-hmm.
I had the chance to meet a young woman who was in a bookstore. She's 20-something years old. And the day that I met her, there were a lot of young people leaving the conference to go and to basically protest at Nissan. Danny Glover was going to be one of the leaders there. Harry Belafonte was going to Skype in. Julian Bond was supposed to be on site. And I asked her, I said, why aren't you there? She says, I used to work for Nissan. I need to be there. And so she went, and I had the chance to speak with her after, and she was very happy that she had gone. She said she hadn't had that opportunity with other young people to step out front and to express herself, and she is a Mississippian. And so she still feels a lot of oppression as a young person living in Mississippi.
We're going to take more phone calls for our guests. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. We have somebody calling in who was also on the trip, so you can say hello to her. We're talking about Freedom Summer this hour of the show, and our guests in studio with us now were on this Freedom Summer journey that Margaret Rozga was heading up, and we talked to her about a month ago, and I was wondering ever since, how was it? So we thought we would find out. Joining us in studio are Portia Cobb. She's associate professor at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee Department of Film, Video, Animation, and New Genres. And she participated in the Freedom Summer Journey, assisting arts at large and the young people in documenting their experiences will be on display at Arts at Large July 25 through early October. And it's something you should see. And Arts at Large is worth knowing about, too. Blugehi Nabala is also with us, one of the young students. She's only 14, who went on the journey, and she has a real international experience already at her young age, living in several countries in Africa, speaks multiple languages, and is going to be a freshman in high school this fall, just graduated from the Milwaukee Academy of Chinese Language. How many languages do you speak?
I think you get up to 8.
Are you serious? You speak 8 languages? Wow. Congratulations. I'm impressed. That's terrific. 2 phone calls in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to phone calls. 800-486-8655. Kathleen in West Allis. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi. I'm one of the adults that was on the trip.
Oh.
And I cannot really put into words the experience that it was. It was terribly moving. It was not, as strange as this may sound, a fun trip, because what it did is it moved my spirit. It angered me. It made me feel sorrow because of the oppression that I experienced in the history of human beings. But I came home with a lot of joy and recognition that the whole civil rights movement had an impact on all of us. It's not just civil rights, it's a human rights issue. It's about women, it's about gays, lesbians, it's about pink people, purple people. It's a human rights issue, and I owe a lot to the people who struggled 50 years ago, and I thank them for that. And what I need to do today is make my own contribution. I need to be my own foot soldier.
Thank you, Kathleen, for calling. Portia, what do you think?
Oh, we had such a wonderful exchange between the adults on the trip. And I think everyone on that bus, we were strangers to one another, except for the artists who had worked with one another or were familiar in that way. But to kind of bridge the gap, you know, some of the participants were from Waukesha. Some of them were former educators. And so to have them there really created a nice balance. And to have them kind of absorb it, you know, in a way that was so open. Their hearts were open. And Peggy, Margaret Rozga, facilitated poetry writing on the bus.
Oh, great.
And so we all, at the end, you know, we were able to share and reflect through the spoken word.
I know you went to, did you go to the James Cheney's gravesite?
Yes, we did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What did you think about that? Was that, I know you've probably seen some horrors in your life, but I'm wondering if that was a particularly moving experience to see this young man who was just registering people to vote and he got murdered. That would haunt me, that gravesite, did it?
Yes, I think that was a powerful thing to do, because not everyone can do that thing, knowing that you're going to be killed, you're going to be beaten, murdered, you're going to suffer, but to keep going and then have faith and all that to help each other, I mean, to help other people do what they're supposed to do. And I think James and the two others did a good thing, because then people would learn from there and keep up the work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I forgot to ask Margaret, some city named the city or gave her the keys to the city, right? Meridian, was it?
That was in Meridian, Mississippi.
Meridian, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And actually James Chaney's gravesite is within that county, so it wasn't that far away.
Yeah. What did you think of that gravesite?
You know, you learn the stories of it being desecrated. People continue to destroy or to take objects from it. There used to be a photo of him embedded, I guess, in the granite, and people continue to dig it out. And so you can see where they've tried to reinforce the actual granite stone by putting something behind it so someone can't push it down.
Mm-hmm.
And every time someone visits, there's a ritual that's done where you pick up a stone and you put it on top of the grave. And so they can count how many people might have been visitors that day or that week.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thanks, Kathleen, for your call. Jennifer in Madison. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, Kathleen. I have a dual perspective as a child of someone who went on that bus trip with Peggy Rozga 50 years ago, and now as an Arts at Large board member, hearing about what was happening on the recent trip.
Mm-hmm.
My sister, brother, and I were very small children when our mother went, and our family protected us from knowing. We didn't know how much she had risked until we were much older. All we knew was that this was the right thing to do because people were being hurt and their civil rights were being taken away from them. Mm-hmm. So we grew up just knowing that. And I was so deeply moved when I heard how the young people responded on this recent trip. At our last board meeting, they told us that one of the kids on the bus said to his teacher, "I can't go back to Milwaukee the person I am. Hmm. Help me to be a better person so I can make a difference." And knowing that that kind of thing can still happen for people when you look at something that was so long ago for many is just very deeply moving to me.
Mm. And what was your mother's response 50 years ago?
50 years ago? Again, you know, my sister, brother, and I were children, so she didn't tell us about the dangers.
Mm-hmm.
Later, I read the material that was sent to them telling them to prepare for attacks and to know that they might lose their lives. And that's terrifying to me, that she could talk to us about it just as, this is something I have to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is the right way for you to act. When you see that other people's rights are taken from them, you'll have to do this too when you're grown up.
Yeah. It is true. There can be moments in our lives that touch us so deeply that it does. And that was probably true for Margaret, that her experience in Alabama in 1965 changed the direction of her life. She was a young woman, and look what happened subsequent, that we have events that cause us to go ahead and take stands and hopefully do some good.
There was a moment in the Voting Rights Museum, which we went to in Selma, Alabama, after we crossed the bridge together. And it just so happens that Beluga, I had given her a recording device, and she recorded a very nice, intimate interview with Margaret, where Margaret reflected in a way that she had not, you know, touching ground again at ground zero, like really reflecting back on her life.
Arts at Large will have the exhibit. It's July 25.
Yes, it
is. Right? And it will run through October.
Yes.
And it's worth seeing, I'm sure. Thank you both so much. We could just talk and talk and
talk.
Thank
you so much.
Thank you very much for being with us. And Beluga, congratulations on everything you've done so far. Just think of how many languages you're going to speak when you're my age. You'll be. It's terrific. I'm glad you had the experience, and I'm sure that you are as well. Our guests, we thank all of our guests this hour for being with us to mark the 50th anniversary of Freedom Summer. Thanks to Margaret, and thank you to Michael. Again, the book that we talked about was Risking Everything, highly worth reading. Michael Edmonds is the editor of all that those collections of writings. Thanks to Judith Sears Poisson for producing. Thank you to Lisa Nalbandian for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. And thank you, everybody, for listening.